You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
I imagine I'm going to say good morning to you, Chris Canty, and you're going to be beaming from ear to ear, so good morning to you.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Rick. No debate about who the best team was at Progressive Field last night. My Yankees came through in fine fashion, a nice 12-3 victory, and at no point last night was the game ever in doubt. The boys went out there and took care of business.
You couldn't be more right. I'll turn to you, Rick. You're probably not as cheerful and optimistic as Chris is, but still a good morning to you.
Thank you, David. Yeah, great morning. It's a hump day. Got a little observations today. Got grocery store today. A big day for Uncle Rick today.
Today's grocery store day.
Yeah, Wednesday's turned into grocery store day. Yep.
Oh, kind of locking in, huh?
Locking it in. Yeah, now because, you know, Cass had the baby and everything else, now I'm shopping and I'm actually wiping down the groceries too, which is not my favorite thing to do. But hey, when duty calls, David, when duty
That's
calls.
Right. That's right. It's a lot for any man, but I know you're just the man for the job, aren't you?
You got to step up, Dave. Like Garrett Cole stepped up last night, like Aaron Judge, DJ LeMahieu. I mean,
they were
if
great.
If the Yankees are going to hit the way they hit last night against, I mean, statistically the best pitcher in baseball, I mean, he won the Triple Crown this year in the American League, then, I mean, they're going to be a tough team. They're going to be a tough out, man. They're going to be a tough team to beat.
If they play like that and Cole pitches like that, tough team, I'd say they're almost unbeatable. And that game was really, I mean, two pitches in. I mean, LeMahieu, Judge, 2-0. You felt like that was it. And there was only one moment, Chris, where I felt like the game was up for grabs at all, and that was 1-2-3 pitches, Carlos Santana, he sits down, Yankees put up a couple more, and that was it. I mean, from beginning to end, that was all Yankees yesterday.
No, it was. Like you said a minute ago, I mean, four pitches in, you're talking about the Yankees having a 2-0 lead, but it speaks to something that we've been talking about all season long. When Aaron Judge is in that lineup, this is a different Yankees team. Like, you can tell they got a little bit of a swagger about him. There's a quiet confidence about him. And when Aaron Judge showed that he's back and that he's Aaron Judge, when he put that ball out of the ballpark, like, that was the moment where it's just like, okay, you know what? The pressure's off everybody else. You set the tone. And then Garrett Cole came out, and he was locked down. Like, that's what you were waiting to see. It felt like you saw this Yankees team play up to their potential, something that we've been talking about all year long. Okay, when are we finally going to get a chance to see this team? And they finally showed up on the road. Because keep in mind, the Yankees were terrible on the road this year. They were 11-18. But last night you saw that this team had a different mentality, and I think that's in part because the best player on the team is back and he's healthy, and that's Aaron Judge.
I mean, Garrett Cole is one of the best pitchers in baseball to begin with.
That was filthy last night.
Well, he was filthy, but then all of a sudden you give him a 2-0 lead.
Right, yes.
Heading into the bottom of the first.
Could not agree with you more. Like maybe any nerves, any concern, any anxiety, when you know right off the bat that they're going to get to the other pitcher and they've already gotten to him, it has to make it easier, right?
It has to. It absolutely has to. And then on top of it, it makes the rest of the lineup more comfortable. I mean, you got DJ LeMahieu and Aaron Judge getting you started. And then what the bottom of the lineup did, Urshela, Torres, Gardner, and even Higgy had a hit.
I mean, Torres, wasn't it like yesterday we were talking about Torres? It's like, well, you know, hopefully he turns around. He was unbelievable last night.
Dude, I'm telling you right now, I mean, pick your favorite movie. I don't care if it's good, whatever it is. Like, I could imagine being the one that gets a script to a movie like The Godfather. I'm like, yeah, this is virtually perfect. Like, I wouldn't change anything. Like, if you're Aaron Boone and you're scripting this thing up before the game, you couldn't have scripted it better.
Nope.
You couldn't have.
There's nothing more. I mean, you're up 2-0 before you, like 2-0 before you can even sit down on the couch. Like, that guy was called about the Jets and he can't finish a beer. You didn't even, your feet weren't even up on the coffee table last night and the game was 2-0.
But that's what, Dave, that's the crazy part of what you saw last night, though. And this is why I get analytics and everything else. And during the course of a 162, you know, analytics, you know, plays a huge role in, you know, how you approach each game. But, I mean, no one could have forecast Bieber looking the way that Bieber looked. Well, I mean, that's the first home run that Aaron Judge has hit since he got back. For them to all of a sudden be able to flip the switch the way
maybe
they flip the switch.
Maybe they can.
Because what they were doing, dude, I mean, some of the pitches that they laid off, and I get a lot of, you know, what Bieber was doing with his curveball, they weren't competitive pitches. meaning they didn't start off in the strike zone so you could lay off them. But they were, I mean, they were having good at-bat after good at-bat. I mean, the approach was, I mean, you haven't seen this from this Yankees team. I mean, outside of Stanton, who, I mean, even he finds a way to hit a home run in the ninth. It's a garbage home run, but, I mean, maybe that kind of, for his confidence, is a good thing. I mean, dude, that was...
You couldn't have scripted it better.
No, but that was the Yankees team that you saw when they were 16-6. You know what I mean? Like, that was a Yankees team at its best last night.
No, they were at their best, man. And you talked about the quality of the at-bats that they had, and I thought it was telling what Aaron Judge said after the game. I mean, they had a long hitters meeting before the game, and it was all about sticking to the game plan and trying to work counts and get pitches to drive. And they said they wanted to do that as a whole. Like, that was the focus. That was the mentality. Like, nobody deviate from the plan. And it's going to take all of us in order to collectively apply the kind of pressure that we need to in order to get the mistakes that we're looking for from the best pitcher on the planet, which is Shane Bieber. I mean, the guy giving up 14 earned runs all year long.
And
they tacked seven earned runs on him in 4 2/3 last night. So, I mean, their approach, something about what they were doing was working. They got ahead in counts early. I mean, Gardy, Higgy, and Judge all found first pitches to hit, I mean, off of Bieber. So, I mean, it was clear that there was a certain approach that they were going to take, and their game plan was effective. But I think it has to be everybody buying into that game plan. And last night, you saw it actually all come together and it work out. So, I mean, I know they're not going to be able to score 12 runs every single postseason game, but if this lineup is capable of having that type of discipline with their at-bat quality, then I think that we're going to see a little more offensive punch from this Yankees team than we've seen in postseasons past.
Now, we mentioned a minute ago the early lead for Gerrit Cole, and we both thought, Rick, that was hugely important. Here is the Yankees' ace pitcher. How does an early lead like that impact you during a postseason game?
It forces you to be aggressive. Solo home run doesn't beat you, but solo home run obviously doesn't tie the game or lose the lead. In any sense of way at that point. It can be helpful to just kind of try to attack the zone and establish where it is. So,
and if you're Cleveland, the last thing you can afford to do is give that kind of pitcher confidence coming out onto the mound in the bottom of the first inning. Like, that was the worst recipe for the Cleveland Indians last night.
Yeah, I mean, we just said how good, how you couldn't have scripted it any better for the Yankees. On the other side, you couldn't have scripted it any worse for the Indians. I mean, that's not outside of the first four in that lineup, I mean, it's not an offensive juggernaut. So if you were Gerrit Cole, if you could find your way through 1 through 4 and then, take care of the bottom of that lineup, you'd be in good shape. But, I mean, to all of a sudden have a 2-0 lead and have your good stuff too. I mean, his knuckle curve was filthy last night. And when you can throw, and you saw, like, when he got aggravated, like when he got pissed, he could ramp it up to 99. And when that fastball starts riding up in the strike zone, forget it. I mean, you got 97 to 99 riding up in the strike zone, and then you can drop a knuckle curve, forget it. I mean, you got no chance. None. I mean, the only one that had a good night last night for the Indians really was Naylor. And Ramirez has had an unbelievable season anyway, but, I mean, Naylor was 4-for-4. I mean, yep. He was good for them. But besides that, now it's on Tanaka, man. I mean, now it's up. I mean, we've seen Tanaka have big, big moments in the playoffs. But you can, again, getting back to the analytics point, is you can clearly see one team, like, especially Bieber. That was his first postseason start. You can tell he wasn't comfortable. Like, from the second he was on the mound, he wasn't comfortable.
Not at all.
At all. So, I mean, that plays a role.
He looked overwhelmed, to be honest with you.
Well, it doesn't help when DJ LeMahieu starts off there. I mean, like Chris said, 4 pitches and you're down 2-0. I mean, you kind of want to make yourself feel like ease your way into a game. And that was the complete opposite of what happened. He got ambushed, man. I mean, they were attacking first pitch fastballs.
Yep.
And then they were laying off. I mean, he's got one of the filthiest curveballs in Major League Baseball. And they were going through the numbers last night. He threw 36 curveballs. He only had 7 swing and misses on 36 curveballs. And he just kept throwing it and throwing it. I mean, that Gleyber Torres at bat, what did he throw, 6 straight curveballs?
Yes. And it was an 0-2 count, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was 0-2 and it was 4 straight balls, yeah.
Yep.
It was almost like he was tipping pitches at some point because they weren't even offering at them. But, I mean, that's a testament to, I mean, if it was the hitters meeting or whatever it was. If it's they feed off Aaron Judge.
I think the umpire having a nice, tidy strike zone helped out too. Like, Jordan Baker was out there calling balls and strikes. Like, if it was outside the zone, it was a ball. If it was in the zone, it was a strike. And I think that helps in terms of the hitters being able to, narrow in on pitches, that zero in on pitches that they can actually do damage on. And that's exactly what they did. They didn't miss any pitches last night. Not from Shane Bieber.
No.
They got when they got their pitch, they took advantage of it and they did some damage. And that's what you want to see from this Yankees lineup, man. You don't want guys going up there and just flailing at the plate like we've seen in postseasons past. And so them being able to collectively put it together, even Stanton running into one at the end of the night, like all of those things, like to me, that's the pop from last. The approach at the plate looks different than it did in the last three postseasons. It just does. And so you're hoping that they can continue to do that.
But the whole team, just in general, I mean, even Gleyber scoring from first base, like the entire, like everything they did last night outside of, you know, Higgy throwing the ball into center field. I mean, they just, it looked like a different team. Like they were all dialed in.
It looked like they turned it on. I mean, I know everyone hates that. You can't do it, but that's what it looked like to me. It looked like, okay, guys, now it really matters. Let's turn it on. And you can't deny that in game one, they absolutely did that.
That's exactly what it looked like. That's exactly what I felt like. We always have these conversations. Like, can teams say, it's a scary game to play, to all of a sudden feel like when it's meaningful baseball or meaningful football, whatever it is, that you can flip a switch. They flipped the switch last night.
Yeah, maybe they can.
Because that wasn't the team that we had seen. I mean, they had spurts of
on
that.
On Sunday, that's not the team that we saw. On Friday, that's not the team that we saw. They made what? They had two separate games last week where they had four errors. And last night they came out and did that. Maybe they're just capable of it. Maybe they realize that, all right, it's postseason. We've got to flip the switch. And it just flipped.
And the beauty of last night, too, is that
it got out of hand early. So you didn't have to rely on any of you guys. You didn't have to rely on any of you guys from the bullpen.
That's right.
You didn't.
Nobody. So now you can have a quick hook with Tanaka tonight if you need it. Because I would rather not mess around with game 3, let's be honest.
No.
No, I don't want to mess around with J. Happ going out there for game 3 either. But here's the thing. The last time Tanaka pitched in the postseason in Cleveland, he gave you 7 scoreless. And so you got him and you got a fresh Chapman, Ottavino, and Britton. I'll take my chances with that.
Yeah, you love you honestly, Chris, you went from being on edge yesterday when we said goodbye on the show. You couldn't feel better right now as we start the show the next day, right?
No, I feel great, Dave.
Yeah.
I feel great about what this team is capable of doing. And here's the thing, man. If we can go ahead and take care of business today, then we're talking about the Yankees having Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday before they got to play again. Isn't that going to be important for a postseason where you're not going to have any off days?
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially so, I mean, I feel good about that. Yeah, I know you got to travel, but I'm just saying, if you don't have to play baseball for 4 days, everybody's going to be fresh. You'll be able to set your pitching.
No.
You can do all of those different things and be ready to go.
I'm agreeing with you. I just think it's also nice that you're going to travel to the West Coast, at least you'll have a couple extra days to get acclimated to where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just take care of it tonight. Like, don't even mess around. Like, I don't want to see Hap go against like Plesak's got nasty stuff. Like,
no, you don't want that because you go from having a dominant.
I don't trust Hap.
And nor should you. Although I got to tell you, and getting to Bieber was impressive, but that Indians lineup does not put the fear of God in any opposing pitcher, I don't think.
No, haven't they scored the fewest runs out of any team that's in the postseason field?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like offensively,
We knew that their offense would be challenged, but I mean, Gerrit Cole still got to go out there and pitch.
He was sensational. I take nothing away from him. Yeah. I'm just saying, like there are lineups that you look at and you're like, oh God, you know,
it's
like going to
be different
lineup
than that Tampa Bay Rays team that they see in the DS. Yes, it's going to be a lot different.
Yeah, that's a different animal.
That's a different animal. Yeah.
But game one, you can't.
But it's a good start, though, Dave. You know what? It's a good start because now you've gone out there and you've done it and you got the confidence. Like the fact that you can go out there and have that approach and dominate that Cleveland Indians team, I mean, that does something for the guys in that clubhouse. I always say this, confidence comes from demonstrated performance. The fact that you've done it in the postseason, now you got the confidence to be able to go out there and try to do it again. So hopefully that's something that the Yankees can do to carry that through this postseason and go on a little bit of a run.
Well, the guys you needed to perform last night, I mean, the biggest decision that Aaron Boone was making going into last night's game was...
Was Gardner-Frazier.
Well, that was it. And Gardner was great last night.
He was great. But isn't he always? Like, in the big spot, don't you have faith in Brett Gardner?
But this is why, yes, if you're Aaron Boone, you feel comfortable putting Brett Gardner in the lineup. Like, hey, Skip, listen. I mean, already what he did, you know, over the last 9 or 10 games offensively, he's a better defensive left fielder. He can actually, I mean, he can threaten to steal a base if you need. Like, he's a better base runner than Clint Frazier. But, I mean, that's why it's nice to have a veteran on your team like that, because Aaron Boone can make that decision and feel good about it, because Brett Gardner is going to show up, and that's exactly what he did last night.
It's like he's one of those guys that you can trust in a big spot. You don't have to worry about him. He's not going to mess it up.
No.
He might not be the reason why you win it, but he's not going to mess it up for you.
He's not going to embarrass you. Exactly right. You can trust him.
Yeah.
I mean, look what the bottom of their lineup did last night, boys. 9 for 18, 6 runs and 7 RBIs.
Yeah.
But, Rico, it's what you've been saying all year long, man. When you have those guys hitting at the top of the lineup, they're not the same. But when you batting them down in the order, all of a sudden, they're going to be more productive because there's more pressure on the guys at the top of the lineup and the pressure's off on them. So now that you got everybody back and healthy in your lineup, everybody's in their natural position, you're going to be more productive. And that's what we saw. That was proven out.
I mean, I don't want to bring the Mets into it, but it's almost Mets-like where you, Todd Frazier on another team batting eighth, you're like, oh, boy, that's terrific. Batting fourth on the Mets, you're like, wait a minute, hang on a second.
Well, what happened with the Yankees? When he's seventh or eighth in the Yankees lineup, he's great, and all of a sudden the Mets signed him.
Well, it's a big difference. When you're relying on him to be hitting in the middle of the order and to be, you know, coming up with guys on base and he's got to produce, that's not what he is. But when he's a bat eighth or ninth and he's the eighth or ninth option, you know what? I'll ride or die with that. The bottom of their lineup is great. If you took the bottom of their lineup and put it 4, 5, and 6, I don't think you'd feel the same way.
No, it frees everyone up, but it's the same in every sport. It's not unique to baseball. It's the same in hockey. If I take a fourth-line center and put him on the first line and say, hey, go score goals, he can't do it. He's a fourth-line guy. In football, if I take a number three wide receiver and make him your number one, now he's seeing double coverage. He's going to be useless. It's the same
what
in
about
every
if
sport.
You take a third-string quarterback and make him your starter on a short week? How's that going to work out?
It might work out really well.
I'll tell you how it's going to work out. Rick's going to take the Jets tomorrow, baby. Rick's taking the Jets. You know it.
No, you're not.
What's the spread of that game? Is Denver still giving points?
I think Denver's giving one now.
Man, come on, man. They can't be giving one on the road short week with a third string
taking
quarterback.
The Jets.
You know, come on, man.
I'm taking the Jets tomorrow. I'm telling you right now.
I don't think you will.
I'm taking the Jets. If Denver's giving points tomorrow night, I'm taking the Jets. If the Jets – listen, because this is how it works with the Jets. Everyone wants Adam Gase fired. If they lose tomorrow, he'll get fired. But because we want him fired, they'll win. That's what's going to happen. You know exactly what's going to happen.
I don't know. I don't feel that as confident.
I don't know. They're wearing the all black tomorrow, too. Could be Adam Gase's funeral.
You watch. You watch tomorrow. They win. I almost want to guarantee it.
You're going to guarantee to win?
I almost want to guarantee it.
Are you going to make it one of your picks for this week?
I told you. I'm going to take him. If Denver's giving points tomorrow, I think I'm going to take the Jets.
Wow. Okay. All right.
I'm telling you, if they can't beat Denver with a third string quarterback that's had nine passes in the NFL on a short week, and
traveling
they're all banged
country.
Up, flying, and you can't beat that, no. Then the Jets and the Giants should be kicked out of the NFL and be forced every Sunday to scrimmage each other and not on television because no one wants to see it. It's embarrassing. That would be one of the most embarrassing moments in my fandom if they find a way to lose tomorrow night.
I don't think it's that outlandish to think that they will.
I don't either. That's the thing, Dave. I don't. I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility. Oh,
I don't know if I can show up. If they lose tomorrow, I don't know if I can show up on Friday.
I understand that. But it is a football Friday. We do have RJ Bell and Paul Feinbaum. But
you're going to want to show up, Rick. You're going to want to show up because you're going to want to see walk on Adam Gase's grave as the Jets head coach. 100%.
You can say goodbye.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to want to show up for that because you don't feel like your franchise can get back right until he's gone. So if losing tomorrow night means that Adam Gase is going to be gone sooner rather than later, aren't you going to be here for it? I know if I was a Jets fan, I would be.
Yeah, but Canty, you know how it works with the Jets. That's not what's going to happen. They're going to win. Watch.
Yeah, they always do what's not in their best interest.
Exactly.
They'll win, and then they'll extend them by the end of the weekend. for a couple of years on to
another vote of confidence from Chris Johnson.
I told you he was an offensive genius. 800-919-3776 ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests on DCR, PRB, the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Let's get to some of these Yankees calls. 800-919-3776. Spike in Jersey. Spike, lead us off. You're on 98.7.
Well, good morning, my friends. I have an analogy to make, and I think it's very appropriate. I'm going to break down the program and break down what I saw last night. Rick, when you make the best save on a breakaway, how you feel? Chris, when you get a sack in a playoff game or in a Super Bowl? And Dave, pretty much every Saturday at 10:30 when you nail stump Rothenberg.
Oh, Spike.
He was bad last week. Let's relax. He was not good last week.
Well, once in a while, but I'm talking the best. And that's what we saw last night. You know, I call a lot of programs, and I've got a big mouth. And I said all along, I thought this is one game. And I'll put it in perspective. But I said, I'll play this team in the parking lot because they paid a lot of money for Cole. And you ever hear the expression, you get what you pay for? That was last night. And I feel the same way about Tanaka. He's got a one-point-something ERA. Chris intelligently mentioned about the last time he was in Cleveland. And here's the thing with Tanaka. 90% of his pitches will be between the knee and the ankle. Now, if you get the same umpire, Tanaka is very vulnerable to an umpire who has a moving strike zone. But if it's that umpire last night, they won't touch Tanaka. He'll just get ground ball after ground ball after ground ball. And the infinite wisdom to put Gardner out there. Now, I know the, I always forget his name, the redheaded kid. What's his name?
Frazier.
Yeah. He finished, see, this is the whole thing with analytics that I don't buy it. And the Yankees don't believe in streaks. He finished poorly. Gardner finished hot. He's going over a small sample. But Gardner has the, I was so happy for him, first of all. He has the experience. He's
it's a left-handed bat, too, Spike.
Right, he's a left-handed bat, and but the, and it's funny. My stepson is a cop, and he goes to me, diehard Yankee fan, diehard. He says, "This guy never pitched in a big game before. I don't care what he did this year," meaning Bieber.
Bieber.
He after the fourth pitch, this guy was done.
Oh, he was toast. He thanks for the call.
Yeah,
Spike.
But that's
he
why
was,
that
he
was so
dreadful last night.
But Dave, that's why that was so important, because when you're going into your first postseason, like a big game like that, like the nerves are real. Like Chris can attest to this, the nerves are real. And then, like for me, it was, you know, I'm just hoping at some point, you know, a shot from the blue line or whatever it is, just kind of like to ease
the first
your mind.
Hit,
right?
Exactly right.
Yeah, the first hit
to get you into the game.
Yeah,
because you expect like once the nerves dissipate because it's you know I'm through the first batter or whatever it is, or I throw the first strike, then you know all of a sudden you can ease in and you get better as you go. They didn't give him an opportunity to get better as he went.
No, nope. They buckled them. I mean, it's like Mike Tyson. You come out first pitch, for, you know, right hand to the jaw goes down. All of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, I'm in a real fight. And he was crushed early.
But let's be honest, Dave. When you got DJ LeMahieu, who won a batting title this year, first guy to do it in the AL and the NL, and then Aaron Judge coming back healthy and locked in, those guys are going to set the tone for your lineup. They're going to set the tone for your offense, and that's exactly what happened. And you knew that Bieber was going to be in for a long night. I mean, they put 105 pitches on him in 4 2/3 innings. I mean, DJ LeMahieu had an 8-pitch at-bat. Judge had a 7-pitch at-bat. Torres had a 6-pitch at-bat. Like, they were seeing a lot of pitches for him. They were making him work. So, I mean, I understand that a lot of it had to do with nerves, and the Indians pitching coach got out there and said the same thing on the broadcast. But, I mean, that had a lot to do with what the Yankees were doing to him as much as it did about his nerves and pitching his first postseason game. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't just all about nerves.
No, I agree. I think it was an awful combination. The Yankees offensively have the potential. Last night they were great, and that moment last night for Bieber was just too big.
Yeah, it was like my brother.
I think both
of those
things are true.
Dave, it was like my brother at the funeral. Like he's already nervous about standing up in front of everybody and having to read what he had to read, and then to all of a sudden, as you're walking up to the stage, to have business cards falling out of your pockets. It's just it's a recipe for disaster.
I love that story.
And then you end up sitting in front of a microphone going, ah, excuse me.
Why did he have an accent when he did it, though?
I have no idea. He turned into a different person. He panicked.
Like, I the panic I get, being nervous, I understand. But why did he, excuse me? Like, why did he have an accent when he did it?
I have no idea because he's, like, trying to clear, like, for some reason he wanted to, like, clear his throat. And he was, like, coughing at the same time as he was saying, excuse me. It was brutal.
So do you think people in the back who were there, like a couple, were looking at each other like, oh, my God.
Yeah, they were like, this kid's a train wreck. They were offering me tissues because I was crying. They thought I was like emotionally, I was crying laughing. They were giving me tissues.
Oh, they were like, this is really hard on poor Rick.
I couldn't stop. I could not stop. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Nerves are real, man. The only decision now, and I'd be interested to see what Chris thinks, is... Do you go back to Higgy, or you think they end up with Sanchez tonight?
I think you go back with Higgy. You go back with Higgy. Why mess around with it? I mean, Sanchez is a guy that can cost you a run. Why give extra outs to a team that's offensively challenged? That's the part that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So even though Higgy had the one gaffe last night, I trust him more defensively than I do Gary Sanchez. And let's face it, offensively, it's a wash because Gary Sanchez is lost at the plate.
You could almost say that it's Higashioka is a better offensive player right now. More consistent,
different.
Certainly.
Yeah, you could absolutely say that. But I just think I guess people look at Sanchez at the plate kind of like you look at Stanton. Like he's
there's always that potential that he's going to hit 600 feet.
A lot of at-bats that are going to look bad, yes. But he could walk into one.
100%. Yeah. But consistently, Higashioka's the better offensive player right now.
Oh, completely agree. Completely agree. That's why I said I'm with Rick on this one. I don't think you mess around with it. You go with Higgy, and then, you know, once we get to the DS, you see how that all plays out. But, yeah, I wouldn't mess with putting Gary Sanchez out there right now. Why would you do that anyway? I mean, you scored 12 runs last night. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Leave it alone.
I feel like they might, though.
I think they might, too.
For some reason,
because if you start Higashioka tonight, you're just saying that he's my number one catcher. Like, it's not even really up for debate.
Yeah, but think about what kind of pitcher you're trotting out there to start the game. I mean, Tanaka's not an easy pitcher to catch. He's not. They're going to be a lot of balls that are down in the zone.
Yes.
There could be a ball that gets away from him if we're talking about Gary Sanchez. I don't want that.
Yeah, but, I mean, you're carrying three catchers. So at some point they feel like either Gary's going to play and then they're going to bring in Higashioka for defense, or Higashioka's going to start and they're going to pinch hit Gary. And that's why you would have three catchers.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know that Gary Sanchez is going to play at some point this postseason. We've already talked about it. I mean, with no off days, he's got to play. That's not even a question. My thing is this. When we're talking about a three-game wild card series, let's go ahead and win these first two games. And let's go ahead and put the best defensive lineup out there that we possibly can, because clearly offense isn't an issue. We just scored a dozen runs. So offense ain't an issue. So let's go with the best defensive lineup that we can, just to make sure that we're not assisting the other team with being able to put some points, put some runs on the scoreboard. That's all I'm saying. Once we get to a five-game series or a seven-game series, that's a different conversation altogether. Right now, let's just get out of the wild card round.
Yeah, but here's the question. Do you start Gary and then bring in Higashioka later in the game when you need him for the bullpen, for his defense? Because for some reason, I feel like they're going to start. For some reason, I think Dave agrees. I feel like they're going to play Sanchez tonight.
I do. I think that they will start Sanchez at catching tonight. Mm-hmm.
Because I think you're right. If you start Higgy again, you're pretty much – he's our guy now.
He's our guy, like moving forward. And if you win tonight, now you don't play till next Monday?
Because let's be honest. If it's – it's not just Gerrit Cole that feels more comfortable pitching to Higgy. If Gerrit Cole feels more comfortable, I'm sure the entire pitching staff probably feels the same way.
Yes.
So
I would agree with that.
So I mean, I don't know. For some reason I get the feeling that Sanchez is gonna catch tonight.
Which I think would be fine. I think the Yankees are gonna beat up on Cleveland. I don't think the Yankees play well, I don't think these two teams are really in the same class. I think Tampa is. I don't think Cleveland is.
Your lips to God's ears, man. I hope that's the case, Dave. I'm just saying I don't want to mess around with a game in the wild card round, because all of a sudden, if you're talking about Tanaka not being at his best because he's not comfortable throwing to Gary, or a pass ball leading to the Indians being able to put a run on the board.
Right, now your season comes down to J-Hap.
Now you're talking about game three with J-Hap. I just don't feel good about that.
I understand. But I think we're going to pop these mics on tomorrow, and we'll be talking about the Yankees moving on.
Again, I'm not saying you guys are wrong. There's a strong chance that Sanchez does start the game tonight. But I just, if it were me, I think I'd be looking at it from the standpoint of we're not a very good defensive team right now anyway, especially up the middle. So I would probably lean toward trying to put the best defensive team out there that I possibly could, knowing that we're going to be able to score runs with Judge and LeMahieu at the top of the lineup. I'm not worried about the Yankees scoring now, not after what I saw last night.
Locked in. Away they go.
No, they were locked in. That was the definition of locked in.
Yep.
I mean, even defensively, too. I mean, the play that Torres, when Higgy threw it in the center field, that was a heads-up play by Torres, too, to keep the Fugazi tag on him.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't go to third base. I mean, that's a heads-up play. And the Yankees have not been good defensively at all.
No, they've been dreadful defensively.
At all.
Dreadful defensively. They played, I mean, really. I mean, we nitpick from last night. They played the perfect game last night. You play like that, it's going to be hard-pressed to imagine someone's going to beat you in a best of five or best of seven moving forward.
Yeah. But that's someone's going to have to beat you.
If you play like that, someone would have to beat you.
Yeah, because you're not
going to
do
it away.
I mean,
yes.
You're not going to, you know, do what the Twins did yesterday. Which was an embarrassment.
Oh, they gave that one away.
What are they
doing? Gave that one away.
What is he doing, man?
Why would he throw the ball like that?
I have no idea. None.
I mean, you could. throwing it like that ever is questionable, but in that situation, to so nonchalantly throw the ball like a fool to second base, what are you doing?
He's probably asking himself that same question right now as we speak.
Oh.
There's no way you sleep after that. I mean, you're chewing Ambien to try to get to bed last night.
Oh, that was unfathomable. In that moment, to throw the ball like that?
Yeah, that was it. I mean, you're out of the
inning. I realize how much I hate the Astros because in that moment, I was so mad at the Twins. Like, I was so mad. I was like, you know what? The only reason I'm this upset is because I hate the Astros.
You should beg to play the Astros in the ALCS. You would destroy them.
I don't want them to get that far, Dave. I want nothing good for the Astros. I don't even want them to get out of the wild card round. Like, I want nothing good to happen. Matter of fact, I wish all the bad things in baseball happened to the Astros and nobody else.
You see how many games in a row the Twins have lost?
17.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, and this is what happens when you make plays like you made yesterday.
Just throw it like a fool.
Yeah, I mean, then you walk in the winning run.
The game, and there's no margin for error now.
None.
Unbelievable. Rick, tell me that this doesn't bother you. Tell me that all this doesn't bother you. Now we got Santiago playing Yankees theme songs, and Yankees fans are walking around like they're worth $1 million because they scored 12 runs. Like, this is awful.
This isn't great, but yeah, I mean, you expected the Yankees to be in the postseason. What aggravates me is the fact that the Miami Marlins are in the postseason.
Oh, almost so it all goes back to the mess for you, is what you're saying.
Yeah, why wouldn't it? You sit here and focus on the Yankees. Focus on my team.
They're the team that's alive, and the Mets are not alive. The Mets were dead weeks ago.
Which is really what should bother you.
That's a joke.
No, but that should bother you. I mean, what Miami dealt with and the fact that they found somehow some way to get themselves in the postseason.
It's pathetic. That's actually what it is. The Mets are on the outside looking in when almost everybody made the postseason is nothing short of pathetic.
Yeah. Between the Mets and the Phillies, I don't know which one is worse, but I mean, the team I root for, Miami, Dave, I mean,
I know.
Miami was besieged.
First of all, they
COVID.
Stink.
Exactly.
First of all, they stink. They're the Marlins. Second of all, they couldn't play games for 2 weeks. Third of all, they brought up half their minor league, off-site roster to play, and mm-hmm. they still made it to the postseason.
Yes, that is correct. They
but
still
don't
run
focus
away.
On the negative when it comes to the Mets, man. Y'all guys are gonna have a new owner in short order, and he's gonna get things turned around. He's willing to spend some money. So things are looking up for the Mets.
I would agree with that.
You know, you guys look awful this year.
I would agree with that. Here's the question.
But how do you agree with that, though?
Because I think
it's going to turn around with an owner that's going to have more money than we know what to do with.
Yeah, but clearly there is some kind of problem.
There was.
I can understand if you just didn't have enough talent or you had a bunch of guys that had bad seasons. I mean, Jacob DeGrom was good. Dom Smith was a revelation. McNeil had a good season. Cano had a good season. Conforto had a great season.
Pete Alonso was terrible.
He was bad. But besides that, I mean, there's plenty of talent. Again, goes back to that. You got to find a way. You get less out of more than maybe any team in Major League Baseball. There is no way that Mets team should have not made the postseason.
Well, they didn't because they're put together so poorly. And their bullpen was such a disaster. And, I mean, they're starting pitching, right? The filling in with... They should have kept Zach Wheeler. Was terrible. Letting him get away. I mean, it's awful what they did. Waka, Porcello, these are not guys that should be your 3 and 4 starters. Matz was unpitchable. So you say you don't know how? Their starting pitching was horrendous, Rick. Awful.
No, I get it. I understand that. I mean, but let's not sit here and pretend like, with what the Miami Marlins dealt with, the amount of pitchers that they went through, that we should sit here and make excuses.
But it's not like the Mets were a game out and the Marlins are the team to beat them. The Mets were nowhere near a playoff spot.
Well, you're making my point. There's no excuse for it.
No excuse. In a horrendous season. But you can see the light, no? At least you brought in a guy that's going to spend a lot of money to try to improve this thing?
It's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it is.
It's absolutely a step in the right direction, but you still have to make. I mean, there's still a bunch of decisions that you have to make.
Yep, I feel a lot better with Sandy Alderson running things than I do with Brody Van Wagenen. I'll tell you that.
I don't even think that's a question.
No, let's go to Manny in Jersey. Manny, you're next up on 98.7.
How you doing?
What's
Gary
up, Manny?
Gary Sanchez is going to catch today. I googled it. He's there ninth.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean you googled it?
I asked Google who's the Yankee lineup, and they gave me a lineup. Same guys, but Sanchez is catching.
You can't Google the Yankees lineup. I can't imagine that at 9 o'clock in the morning
at 9:30 the Yankees have their lineup already filled out.
Well, he Googled it. He found that information out. I mean, what?
Try it. Google it. Yankees lineup. See what happens.
Let me see. What do you think I would put in for something like this? Just Yankees lineup?
Yeah, go with Yankees. Yankees starting lineup.
Yankees starting lineup. Okay.
See what comes up. So pretend like this is Stump Rothenberg.
Yeah, nice.
One of the things I've used on the Google is to pull up maps.
Yeah, he's right. No, of course it's ridiculous. It is.
Did it come up?
No, it didn't come up.
I still get the feeling that Gary Sanchez is going to be in the lineup tonight.
I agree with you, but I don't think that this gentleman Googled it and it gave him those answers.
You can't always trust the Google.
No. For maps, it's very good, though, but beyond
that. Very good
that,
for maps.
Use the Google.
Absolutely. You want a little news from the NFL?
I do want some news from the NFL. Is it good news or bad news?
It's not awful news. It's not awful news as far as the whole COVID thing going on with the Titans. One more Titans player learned early this morning that he tested positive in Tuesday's round of COVID-19 testing. This is from Tom Pelissero. He says, told me and Mike Garofalo, all of Tuesday's other tests in Tennessee and all tests for the Vikings came back negative this morning. So I guess it's now another player and the coaches and personnel, nobody on the Vikings, all Titans, and it's just one more. So not awful news to learn on a Wednesday.
Not awful. I mean, it's not great for Tennessee if they have to. I mean, if they're shut down till Saturday and they're going to play.
Well, regardless, they were going to be shut down till Saturday.
No, I know. Which again, I get the NFL wants to play these games, but I can't imagine this is going to be the only time. I mean, we'll do a story and observations about the Las Vegas Raiders and what they decided to do. Which makes, again, I guess it's the Raiders. It makes no sense. But why wouldn't they have, like, why would they just make an, add a week 18 and just have that for all the games that we end up having to postpone when everyone makes up in week 18?
Put it to that extra week?
Yeah, I don't understand why they don't do that. Because they have the flexibility to be able to push the postseason and Super Bowl back. Like, they built that into the schedule this year intentionally. I don't understand why we have one of these instances pop up where you're going to put a team at a competitive disadvantage where they can't be at their facility for the entire week and they're expected to go out there Sunday or Monday and play a game.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense that you would be shut down till Saturday and play a game on Sunday. How is that fair for anybody? This is not
baseball or basketball either, man. You're talking about football. You are in harm's way when you go out there. If you're not prepared, talk about somebody getting their head taken off. Like, if you're not ready to pick up the blitz package for the Pittsburgh Steelers, what's going to happen to Ryan Tannehill? Like, that's the part of it that you got to consider, the risk of injury because a player isn't prepared, because a player hasn't been able to go through their normal routine. Now, I get that everything isn't going to be exactly fair, but, I mean, when you talk about not having 4 days of preparation before you play a game, when you can be in your facility, like, that's a lot to ask anybody in the NFL. That really is. So Roger Goodell has to reconsider this position.
Although it sounds like if all is clear on Saturday, they'll push to play the game on Sunday. I agree with you that they shouldn't, but it sounds like that's what they're going to try to do.
See, to me, at a minimum, you should just move it to Monday night. Like, that's at the minimum.
Or why not
like,
Tuesday?
Dave, that's fine too, but I just think when you have a natural opportunity because players play games on Monday night, like, I can understand them playing a game on Monday night. Or even just deciding to push it back and have a week 18 and make it up that way. Like, you can do that. Like, the fact that you're going to try to just cram this game in here on Sunday, to me, that doesn't make sense because you don't have to.
You don't have to. Now, the concerning thing is the Vikings. Now, so far, they've all tested negative. That's terrific. If they actually start to test positive, now you're in big trouble. Because I guess there was that little sweet spot where the teams could have it, not know they had it, play the other team. Hopefully it's not spread. So hopefully this is just contained to Tennessee. And if Tennessee doesn't play this weekend, okay. But if it spreads on to Minnesota, now you're talking about this thing really kind of exploding. And that would be the worst thing for the NFL.
Yeah, but see, to me, if Minnesota comes up and everybody's clean, that's a positive for the NFL moving forward, even beyond these two teams, because you're seeing that, okay, even with the contact of playing a football game, you know, you're not, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to spread it if you do have somebody that's positive that's participating in that game. So, I mean, that would be good news. for the NFL. So let's hope, fingers crossed, that that's the case and nobody in Minnesota has COVID-19. I think that that would be the NFL, you know, dodging a bullet, so to speak, with being able to contain the spread to just one team.
Yeah, I just don't understand why you wouldn't just – again, I understand why that – no, maybe I don't understand why they're trying to get this game played on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. But this doesn't feel like this is the last time this is going to happen.
You'd be hard-pressed with the way this virus is now running rampant around the country again. Even in New York, it's getting worse now, that this would be a one-and-done kind of situation.
Yeah, so why not just give yourself a Week 18? If there are other games that have to get postponed, they all just get played on that week.
Well, I mean, if it means a Week 18, if it means you have to, you know, push to a Week 18 and 19, like if you have to extend, like this isn't unforeseen territory. Whatever it is that you need to do to get the season in, people are going to understand. I don't know why you have to be so stubborn and say, no, we're going to play on Sunday when a team can't get together till Saturday.
Well, maybe they're trying to wait until the last, you know, possible moment to make that decision about adding games at the end of the season, adding a Week 18. Maybe they're saying, you know what, the second wave is going to be coming this fall. It could get worse. We could be talking about teams missing more games because of COVID outbreaks. And so let's use that as a last resort option to add a Week 18. And if we can get teams to make them up and to play the games within a day or two of when they were originally scheduled early on, then let's do it that way. And let's preserve that option for Week 18 until, you know, we're in the heart of the second wave of the coronavirus, which every scientist is expecting at some point this fall. Maybe that's what they're thinking. But even if that's what you're thinking, you need to do the Tennessee Titans a solid and say, you know right. what, we're not going to ask you guys to play a game on Sunday. Let's just move the game to Monday or, like you said, Dave, Tuesday, and we'll go from there.
Whatever it is. Like, I think people are the most flexible that they've ever been this year. I mean, this is a disaster of a year. So if it means it's Monday at 5 o'clock right before the Monday night game, okay. If it means it's Tuesday, if it means that you swap a game from another team and put this game Week 8 and other teams move up to Week 7, if it means it's Week 18, whatever it is. But having them play on Sunday potentially, it feels very, very unfair.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you're affecting the competitive balance and the integrity of the season. I don't think you should do that. Like, that's just not the right thing to do. Plus, you're asking the players to, you know, absorb more risk. I mean, playing in the middle of a global pandemic is risk enough, but now you're asking the guys to go out there unprepared versus a team that's been preparing for them all week in their facility.
Yep. And
it's like you're asking guys to be in harm's way. I just think that that's the NFL setting the Titans up for failure. And you're talking about a 3-0 team. Like, this is a team that has, you know, playoff aspirations, championship aspirations. They were in the AFC Championship game a year ago. So why would you want to deal them that kind of hand?
Yeah, you heard Mike Tannenbaum on our show yesterday said he thinks they're the second best team in the AFC.
So I just think if you're the NFL, like, go ahead and announce that now.
Third
go
best
ahead
team.
And schedule that now.
He said second.
No. Tennessee's not the second best team.
That's what he said.
No, he didn't.
That's what he said.
Don't put words in the mic.
That's what he said. He said, I think they're the second best team.
It's Kansas City, Baltimore, and then whoever you want to put as the third.
That might be yours. That's not what he said yesterday.
I think you misheard what he said. Santi, I need the audio.
I know Tannenbaum is bullish on the Titans. I'm not.
Well, he's bullish on all his guys.
Yeah.
Are you surprised that it's Tannehill and between Tannehill and Gase?
Well, Tannehill.
Yeah, I am a little bit surprised though, Rico, because it's like it's Tannehill and Gase, but Tannehill is clearly better without Gase. So why is he bullish on Gase?
Because it's his guy.
Okay.
You know what? He's loyal, if nothing else. If he likes you, he likes you. He's not going to turn on you. That's for sure.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, he hired him.
I understand.
Yeah, and he's awful. He's awful. He's a terrible head coach. Does anybody around the National Football League other than Mike Tannenbaum think that Adam Gase is a good head coach?
Doesn't seem it.
No, man.
He's going to die on that sword,
though. You can't defend him as a head coach. They're talking about firing him after week four. Can't be a great head. Can't be a great NFL head coach.
No, it has not worked that way. Today on ESPN Daily, the NBA Finals tip off tonight between the Heat and Lakers. Brian Windhorst details LeBron's history with the Heat and what we should expect from King James on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. All right, Chris, you heard it. We had a little argument on the show. I said that Mike Tannenbaum said that Tennessee is the second best team in the AFC, and Rick was all upset, up in arms over it, really. I misheard. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm talking about. He would never say that. Santi, if you would play the audio, please.
Yeah, it's Tennessee for me. I think they're the second best team. I like them more than Baltimore because Ryan Tannehill is playing really, really good football over, you know, the last year and change. And for me, they can rush the passer. I think Clowney will work his way into better game shape. But there's a team that can pass the score. They can run it with Henry. Gostkowski looks like he got through that first game. They have a good field goal kicker. So I think they check every box. And they beat Baltimore last year. And, you know, last night ESPN reminded us Baltimore was the number one seed last year, not Kansas City. And that game, the championship game, was in Kansas City because Tennessee knocked out Baltimore. So I think we've already seen Tennessee beat Baltimore in Baltimore. I don't think Pittsburgh's going to be there in the end because I just think Ben's too old. And we'll see that play out. But I think it's clearly Kansas City, Baltimore, and Tennessee's a discussion, and then everybody else.
So what do you think?
I can't take him serious. He's all hopped up on X2.
Hey, he's the best. Just own it. Just own it. I heard him say it yesterday.
Dave, when you start going to, and they got a good field goal kicker, I mean, you're grasping at straws.
You know what? You can't just own that you got it wrong. I said that's what he said. You said
I didn't get it wrong. He got it wrong. I was trying to keep him. I was trying to protect him.
You got it wrong. You weren't listening. You were off daydreaming. Right. I was locked in listening to what he said.
Once he went in with the Tennessee, I must have tapped out.
I don't need anything written. Just the verbal's fine. Let's go, Andy from Merrick. Andy, Hump Day Hockey. You're on 98.7.
Good morning, DCR. It is a Humpty Day. And we are going to Milo DiPietro's Stanley Cup champion, Tampa Bay Lightning. You ready, boys?
We're as ready as we can be for Lightning.
Just trolling me now.
These are current single-season records for the Lightning. What current player holds the organization record with 60 goals in one season?
Stamkos.
Bang. What current player holds the organization's record with 128 points in a single season?
Ooh, 128 points in a season. Is that
did it in 2018-2019.
Oh, that's Kucherov.
It is Kucherov. 2 for 2. All right, let's put you guys in the net. There have been two Lightning netminders who have recorded a 40-win season. Name both of them.
Bishop?
There's one.
Hobby Boulin?
Not Hobby Boulin. Mm. Think more recent.
Vasilevsky.
Nice. Bang. And finally, there have been two goaltenders who hold the club record with 33 losses in a single season. Name either one of them.
33 losses in a single season.
It's got to be early on, right?
One of them's early on. One of them's in the DiPietro era. In fact, come on, Ricky. Lot of New York flavor to that DiPietro era, man.
Come on, Ricky.
A lot of New York flavor.
A lot of New York flavor. Tampa.
Well-traveled.
Did he play on my team?
He was on the Islanders a year or two before you were there.
Wade Flaherty?
No.
Darren Poopa?
Darren Poopa Scooper was the 1993 loss. And Kevin Weeks.
Oh, Weeksy.
Traveled New York flavor goalie, each 33 losses in a year. Happy Humpty Day, guys. Stay healthy as always.
All right, thank you very much. That is Andy from Merrick. It wasn't as awful as I thought it would be.
No, I mean, you got some right. No, those are good questions.
Yeah, they weren't terrible.
I mean, that wasn't like the Mike Tyson question you got asked on Saturday, but
it was a terrible question
that sent you in a tailspin.
Come on, I know you don't care for me, and I think we all understand that. But that was a terrible question. Like, can you ever take my side?
I always take your side.
The first ever
don't worry
win
about
for
me.
Mike Tyson. Who
worry
would possibly
about your producer.
Know that?
Listen,
I
I'm
bet you
the
Mike Tyson wouldn't know who he beat in his first ever fight.
I would believe that, but hey, don't be mad at me. That's your producer setting you up. I'm not the one lining up these calls with the questions. That's Ty doing it.
Yeah,
be mad at him.
Well, I wasn't happy. We didn't talk the rest of the show.
Oh, he set you up for failure.
Yeah, he did. I'm still not happy about it.
I know, because it completely ruined the segment for you.
Oh, I was livid. I was like, what kind of question is this? Mike Tyson's first ever win. The fun about the segment is you can kind of play along at home. Nobody knows that.
I'm sure there's some people. I would imagine there's some boxing fans. I think Bart might know that. Bart Scott might know that. He's a huge boxing fan.
No chance.
You don't think so?
No. No. I don't think
Tell Anthony.
That does seem like one right Bart would know, though. Nobody knows who Mike.
I don't even remember now. It was like Mercedes something. Mike Tyson's first ever win it was against. Title, fine. Trevor Burbick, you want to get to that, fine. Larry Holmes, fine. But give me a break. First ever win. Still annoyed by that. It was ridiculous.
Well, listen, take this break. Take a deep breath. I'm gonna need a big 10 o'clock hour.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.